This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing Christmas by Starlight, a.k.a. 2 weeks' notice, Christmas style. So, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one, and we'll see you next time.
Are you ready for one dry kiss?
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies where we recap, in most cases, one movie in a week. That's right, why bother watching the movie where you can just tune in here and listen to us talk smack or wax poetic about it? This week we're doing Christmas by Starlight, which is a Hallmark movie and my gift to my lovely co-host across from me, Corinne, my Adora Bell co-host. Chinga, 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 ching. Who always slays during the holidays, ooh, even if we park it in the middle of August. Corinne Edding.
And I am here with my co-host who left this glittering Hallmark present under my tree. The exemplification of generosity, love, and all that is Noel, Miss Tamara Kosio.
And by gift, you mean this podcast, because I chose a Hallmark movie, right?
Yes.
Or is it just a gift of my friendship?
No, I feel
like... Or is it both?
Well, both. And I feel like I got an early Christmas gift by you doing this movie. So...
Yes. Although it feels like things are amiss because we switcheroonied in the front in the beginning. Corinne did the disclaimer. I did the introduction. Uh-huh. And the minute I did the countdown clap, my mood ring that I have on my finger broke into three pieces.
Aww.
And somebody told me when I bought it at a craft fair, because it's made out of hematite, she goes, when this ring breaks, it means that whatever bad energy that you have is going away. And I think that's just a crock of shit for saying, this is cheap and it's going to break. So when it does, don't get mad at me.
Hey, look, I think that, you know, you were saying that you weren't in the best mood. I think that what she says, it's perfect. It breaks and now it's a release. Oh.
It's true, but this is the third one that's broken on me.
See, you keep on getting rid of that bad energy. Good for you.
I guess so. I guess it's all gone now. The bad energy's completely gone. See? Don't I sound better?
You sound very centered and chill, I gotta say.
Release.
Super relaxed.
Release. Release. It's so funny because Corinne and I usually chat for like 45 minutes before we start. I'm sure we would totally like go have a meal before if we lived in the same cities, but we don't. So we video chat with each other for a little bit. And I was telling her about my last couple of days, which is why she said I wasn't in the greatest of moods. And after I was telling her, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then, well, God damn it, no wonder why I'm in a bad mood. And sometimes all the shit storms happen separately and you forget. And then when you like do a weather forecast of the shit storms, you're like, wow, it's been a hellacious 5 days. No wonder.
Yeah. No, you just had a lot of different things intersecting. I, on the other hand, well, yeah, I'm doing okay. I try and work on my mental health and I like look at my emails from the latest Kate where she says inspiring things with cute animals.
Mm-hmm.
A favorite one that I got today was bad brain days just happen. You won't always feel like this. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. And then there's like a cute little picture of like a, you know, of a bird and there's like a little kitty and stuff like that. And I'm like, thank you, the latest Kate. I appreciate your cute inspirations to like uplift me a little, you know. So that's like part of my like mental health care is getting these emails and sometimes writing out the messages as, oh, I can't remember what it's called, but you know, the thing that you start your day with to like help you get you off on the right foot to just like center yourself.
Affirmations.
Thank you. Yes.
You're welcome.
So I've been trying to do that, you know, still struggling with life, whatever. But yesterday I did work on my sister's fairy garden. So that was fun.
Oh, tell me about this fairy garden.
Super cute. My sister loved fairy gardens and Sylvia, a mutual friend of ours who is like super crafty, she wanted to do a fairy garden up at the church that we all go to. And so we installed one last year in June and then it hadn't really been tended to since and it looked real shitty. the last two Tuesdays, we spent time working on the fucking fairy garden. We have upgraded the fairy gardens. Fairies are now like even happier than they ever have been because they're getting a luxer life than they once had. And okay, I just sent you a picture. There, it just went through.
Oh, that's super cute.
Yeah, so there's like little buildings. There's little like glass pathways in it. There's like a little river and a mermaid and, I mean, little gnomies.
Where did you get those little literal tree houses? Because there's like little tree houses with mushroom cap roofs and little look through windows and doors. And some of them have some greenery growing out of them. And they're really colorful and cute.
So,
Sylvia didn't make those, did she?
No, she did not. Like Amazon. I bet you China made
them. Amazon
those.
Made them.
Yeah.
China made them.
But like she like did extra little painting touches on there. So there's like a little rainbow arch of flowers, and she made them like little rainbow colors and added like bedazzled them and stuff like that. Yeah.
Good job, Sylvia, if you're listening. It looks gorgeous.
Yes.
And Corinne.
What about you, Missy?
I don't have a fairy garden. Thanks for asking. I can say one thing that I do have here that I'd like to mention.
Okay.
That Christmas in August has kind of gotten me in a tizzy because I started holiday shopping after watching this movie. But then I closed my computer because it's August. But then I thought maybe I'll be one of those people that does their holiday shopping early and gets everything done like well before December.
Yeah.
And then I thought, nah, and I closed my computer.
I definitely would start shopping for my sister in like July, August. So, you know.
See, and that's why this Christmas in August is perfect for you. I think I'm just percolating. I'm warming up to it. It's going to happen. It hasn't happened yet. It's like my little Christmas conscious going, Tamara, Christmas is all year, not just December. Open up Amazon. Don't you want to get something cute for your bestie? How about Larry?
The key to that when you do your early shopping is to have a central location for everything.
Yes.
So that way you can keep track of everything. You can look and see what's there. And that way you're not like finding them in different nooks and crannies throughout and being like, oh, that I should. No. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Because when I came to see you with all the Christmas stuff that I bought for you, and our Christmas was delayed because of COVID and other sicknesses.
Yeah.
Like I literally forgot two things. I forgot to put two things in my suitcase. So Corinne says as she pulls out the tumbler that she also got me.
Yes. I
got into my hands.
I got Tamara this really cute cup with straw. I know it doesn't sound all that exciting, but it's got like the painted ladies from San Francisco on it, which are houses, not people. And
I would take one with painted actual ladies, too. That might be kind of cool.
And yeah, last week when we started recording, I was like, oh, by the way, this is for you. And I showed her the cup that I bought her for Christmas that I never gave her. So yeah,
all the stuff that I have for you, I was like, well, this is mine now because it's cute.
oh, I see how it is.
I only said that because I gave you like 8 or 9 things, so it was like, you don't need this, you don't know. This lives here now. Speaking of gifts that never get received, Corinne,
yes,
did you by chance write a synopsis that you would like to gift us?
Why, yes. I have the synopsis that is the gift that keeps on giving. Well, it just is a few sentences, but you know. Synopsis. Christmas by Starlight, a.k.a. 2 weeks notice. Christmas style.
Oh, yes. That's another thing I forgot to mention.
Yes.
It's like a 2 weeks notice with Hallmark sprinkles all over it. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
You were not lying.
Yes.
It is almost mirror Hallmark image of that movie.
Yes. Yes. But it's got its own little flavor.
No, and would watch it again just like I would watch 2 weeks notice again, hands down.
Yeah. No, and it's so funny because I hadn't seen 2 weeks notice, but I'd seen this movie several times. And so when I watched 2 weeks notice for our podcast, I was like, wait, what? wait, what?
I was like, they stole this shit from Kimberly Sustad and Paul Campbell, those bastards.
And then I thought, well, oh, maybe it's the other way around. But they definitely put their own spin on it. So, like, there's some really nice moments in this movie.
Yes, there are.
So, Christmas by Starlight, a.k.a. 2 Weeks Notice Christmas Style. Annie, played by Kimberly Sustad. Her life is good. It's right before Christmas, her favorite season. She just helped a couple adopt a child. She's a family lawyer. And her parents own a restaurant that makes the best waffles in town. Yay! My dad makes the best waffles in town, and I get to have them when I spend the night. That is...
Quit it. Quit bragging.
They're delicious. So, but back to Annie. Her life is... coming up roses until she sees some paperwork on the restaurant's office desk saying the building is going to be sold. What? Now Annie has to figure out a way to save the building. And if that's by making a deal, 2 weeks notice style, with William Holt, played by Paul Campbell, the immature son of the developer we affectionately call Papa Holt throughout this script, played by Malcolm Stewart, who played a father figure opposite Paul Campbell in the Hallmark movie Surprised by Love, where Paul Campbell played a driftwood artist, hashtag career goals.
Wait, he wasn't Paul Campbell's father. He was the other girl's father, right?
No.
I was like, I don't remember Paul Campbell's father in that movie. Like, he must not have left an impression.
Paul Campbell's father, spoiler alert, in that movie is dead, but... No. He played a father figure in the movie. Yes.
Got it. It's about to feel real, real bad now. Take it back.
No. You're all on track. Will Annie end up subverting the entire building company, taking it over and using them to build housing for the unhoused?
Yes.
I know, right? Great, right? Will William Holt ditch his Peter Pan syndrome and do something in his office besides playing mini basketball with the hoop he has hanging on the wall? Yeah. Will Papa Holt get disgusted with his son and throw in the towel and retire to the Bahamas? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
I hate to say it, but if I had a corner office, I would also have a mini Nerf basketball hoop on the wall. I'm just saying.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
I personally would have a lacrosse set up because... then whenever anybody came into my office, I could just fling a lacrosse ball at them and see what happened. Say, think fast.
Yeah, the old lacrosse ball action in the offices. Yeah. You know, some people have the Zen gardens.
Exactly.
Just like rake the sand around. Corinne will fling a ball at your face.
Exactly. Well, you know, I'll have a stick by the door so that they can be prepared if they know what's going on.
If they think fast.
Yeah, if they think fast. Yeah.
I guarantee I would get smacked in the face many times by that ball. So I'll just be like, what's happening? Is that a ball coming out my...
That's why I have your lovely, like, hockey mask style kind of cage for your face with bedazzled. So it's cute, you know?
Oh, okay. So in some offices, other places, other buildings, not Corinne's, mind you know, where sometimes they make them wear, like, those protective booties to protect the carpet.
Yeah.
Everybody in your office has to wear lacrosse gear. That's bedazzled.
Well, you get to because you're to protect your beautiful face.
Great. Because my reflexes are that of a rhinoceros instead of a cat.
Yeah, because everyone else is like in the, because, like, you know, I have my corner office with the beautiful windows and everything like that. And then, like, in the center, there's everybody in their cubes. And they're all using their cubes to, like, fling lacrosse balls back and forth and, you know, just, like, duck and, you know, be real exciting about it all. So, you know.
Oh, my gosh. You could totally use that for, like, intra-office mail, too. Like, hey, oh, Susie, here's this memo. All right, Brian, here's a stapler I borrowed.
It's like the vacuum tube system, except with lacrosse. Oh, my gosh, this is amazing. I love this.
Mm-hmm.
You're a genius.
Thank you.
Speaking of geniuses, Tamara, you were the person who predominantly wrote this script. And are you up for sharing, for getting us started off here on Christmas by Starlight?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
I wrote it. I'm going to let you go ahead and do all the sections yourself, Corinne.
Fantastic. I'll just change my voice into yours for your sections. So I'll sound like this. And then for my sections, I'll sound like this.
I do not sound like that. Okay, take it back. I guess I have to participate so I don't sound like Smurfette. We open on a snowy Chicago skyline and zoom into a family law office. It's decorated for the holidays. Lawyer Annie, played by Kimberly Sestad, is breaking the news to a happy couple. The adoption has gone through and they are the proud parents of a brand new child. Well, maybe not brand new to the world, but new for them. Annie directs the two to go home and celebrate. It's a happy day. Next, we see Annie home that night. She's dressed in her holiday PJs, admiring a snow globe with a ballerina in it. But then her jam comes on. Run, run, Rudolph, Santa's gotta make it to town.
Do, 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 do.
She quickly puts it back on the fireplace mantle, picks up her dog, and starts wiggling her bootay around the living room. She's into it until she whips around and sees her parents standing in the doorway, chuckling. She quickly composes herself and asks, what are you doing here? Mom explains that they were coming home from the cafe, heard the commotion, and wanted to check on her. Dad was against coming in specifically for the fact that you didn't want to catch her in a compromising position, like dancing around with her dog in her Christmas jammies.
Or naked would be like what might be
or
happening.
Having sex.
Yeah.
What am I saying? It's a Hallmark movie.
No.
Or kissing somebody passionately on the couch.
But not touching too much. Just
felt up.
Lips extended.
Maybe lips. Maybe a knee caressing another knee.
Ooh.
Maybe a hand on the shoulder. Oh, God. Touching That's like what? Hallmark third base?
Yeah, seriously.
Maybe kissing passionately on the forehead.
Oh, now it's gloves off time. Hello.
Mm. Mom reminds Annie that you said this house has an open door policy. And Annie agrees, but adds open door, not walk through the door. But now that they know that she's safe, they go on their merry way. Thanks, Mom and Dad. The next morning, Annie is at her parents' restaurant, the Starlight Cafe, home of the best waffles in Chicago. Annie's regaling them about the couple that got approved for adoption, and her parents reminisce about when they got her. Annie's adopted. Later, a smattering of children are sitting at the Starlight tables building gingerbread houses while Annie floats around giving tips and encouragement to the kiddos and realizes that they're at the precipice of a jelly bean emergency. They're almost out! Jelly bean emergency! Rear, rear, rear!
Okay, just imagine if they were running out of those nerd gummies. Can you...
And I also had a hypothesis about this part because... In this section, when she's making the little gingerbread houses with all the kiddos that looked entirely too good for kids' work, I'm just saying, they had gumdrops and jelly beans. And I'm like, is that how they get the kids not to eat the candy by getting the grossest shit put on those bad boys?
No kidding.
If they had nerd clusters, that house would be bare. It would be minimal. It would be modern. It would have no color on it because I would have eaten everything, all the adornments.
Yes. I completely agree with you because as a child, I always remember getting the Easter basket and having these giant jelly beans in there and being like, jelly beans! And then trying a jelly bean and being like, pleh, 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 pleh.
Yeah, what is wrong with you people?
I thought I liked sugar, but I really don't like these.
Yeah. You guys have eaten jelly beans before, right, Mom, Dad? You've had these. You can't possibly like them. They can't possibly be good to you.
It's like plausible deniability. Like, we give you candy. Candy that you'll hate, but candy.
That you'll never eat, so we're safe. Candy. Yeah. Anywho, Annie hurries back to the restaurant office to get more jelly beans. Once back there, she notices a paper about not renewing the lease. What? She's aghast and demands answers from her parents. They explain that the company that owns the property is refusing to renew their lease. They will shut the restaurant down along with neighboring small businesses to knock everything down and build sky rises where they once stood. Make something cute and quaint, ugly and... faceless and soulless.
Yay!
Annie argues, but I grew up here along with half the neighborhood. They can't do that. They can't do that.
They can do that. They can.
I guess they can do that. The parents assure her that they've tried everything. The cafe was their life, but it's out of their hands. Annie balls her hands into a fist and she vows to give the offenders Holt Enterprises a visit and a piece of her mind because nobody fucks with her family.
Yeah.
She storms off with fire in her eyes, but her mom calls after her, honey, pants. Yes, that's right. This whole time, she's been wearing red plaid jammy bottoms, and I guess that's not the power suit you want when conducting property negotiations. So she hurries off to change.
I mean, you know, sometimes you do.
I would hightail it over there in my plaid jammy pants because it'd be like, I'm so crazy with anger that I didn't even bother getting dressed. I just hurried over here.
That's beautiful. Well, and you could be like, look at me. I'm your Christmas present, ready to be unwrapped. But really, this is all about saving the building, saving the building. Whee! Next, see Annie getting out of a cab with appropriate attire. She's not in jammy bottoms, but has a smart gray dress on. She's arrived to a high-rise building, Holt Enterprises, and goes inside. A few stories up, William Holt is playing Nerf basketball in his large corner office.
Yeah, he is.
He has not gotten the tip on the new hip office craze of lacrosse, but, you know, we all can't have such refined tastes. Anywho.
Just wait till the next Campbell Sestad joint. It's probably going to have lacrosse office equipment in it. I guarantee it.
Nice. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And I keep saying Campbell Sestad because they both wrote this together. Yes. So,
which is cool that the two stars of the movie actually wrote the movie. They sat down, they watched mm-hmm. 2 weeks' notice, and they were like, yes, but like, let's put some fun twists on that. And I'm okay with that, honestly.
Yes, they're like, yes, but ching, 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 ching.
Exactly. They
sprinkle Christmas. Like Christmas fairy dust. Yes.
All over everything. His beleaguered assistant, Lyle, informs Will of his upcoming responsibilities, but all William wants to do is play. Come on, I'll give you a 10-point lead if you join me. His assistant counters, how about 10 minutes of your time to go over the new bylaws for the City Planning Commission? William feigns snoring. Boring. And instead dunks his ball into the wall net. Just then his father walks in and Will, who pops into his desk chair with a swiftness, seriously tells his assistant, why don't we go over those bylaws for the planning commission? Lyle smirks and answers, you read my mind. But there's no time for that because Dad is coming in hot. He reprimands William for missing the investors meeting for the waterfront proposal. His son snidely says, well, I didn't miss my afternoon meeting for drinks. And as far as proposals, I'm not sure she's the one. Papa Holt is not amused, and Will assures him, don't worry, the deal is going to close. But even if it doesn't, does Chicago really need another big glass building? Papa Holt rolls his eyes, laying out that we've faced two lawsuits because of you already this year, and now we have a complaint from the Preservation Society, so I'm getting you a lawyer. They'll shadow you and make sure you don't make any more huge mistakes. Will is appalled. So you're hiring me a babysitter? Papa Holt says dryly, of course not. I expect you to. And if you don't get your act together, when it becomes time for me to retire, I'll sell the company instead of passing it on to you. Papa Holt turns on his heel and leaves as he has actual work to do. Will is shooketh. So he's decided to start seriously interviewing lawyers so he can step up. Nah.
I didn't write that.
Yeah. No, you did not. He complains to Lyle, I don't need a babysitter. Anyhow, that's what you're for. Lyle shakes his head wearily. Yes, and I can only do so much. I can't do the legal stuff. Will peers cautiously around his office door, seeing a room full of lawyers waiting to be interviewed. He ducks back into his office. You know, Lyle, I'm not a child. I'm going downstairs for a coffee break. And we say to him, yes, Will. Playing basketball in your office causes one to have a mighty thirst. good self-care there. Just completely ignore the room full of lawyers. A completely adult move. Way to go.
And big boys, only big boys drink coffee. He's not a child. He's a big boy.
You're a big boy. Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
You want cream and sugar in that coffee. Yeah.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
As he leaves, an employee calls after him, Mr. Holt. Just as Annie passes by, she hurries after Will, realizing that this is her guy. The diabolical gent trying to put her parents out of business. She hustles alongside him. Mr. Holt! Will interrupts her. I know who you are. I don't need a lawyer, but go ahead, give me your best pitch. Annie's confused, because how did he know she was a lawyer? She follows him to the elevator, trying to convince him not to close her parents' cafe, but he blocks her from entering the car with him and tells her it's only single car occupancy. She hesitates momentarily before another lady slips inside. As the doors close, he gives her a, well, what do you know? I lied. Look. She hurries down the nearby stairs. She must be in excellent shape because she nearly beats him to the lobby. He's impressed at her persistence and asks again for her to give him a pitch. She blurts out quickly that the Starlight Cafe is a cute little place. It's the pinnacle of the neighborhood and has had the best waffles 13 years in a row. Well, technically 12, but that's only because they left the category off 1 year. And if you close it down, there will be a revolt. He's confused and asks, aren't you here for a job? What firm are you from? Now she's confused. Firm? What do you mean? I'm a family lawyer. My name is Annie Park. Now he's even more confused. A family lawyer? Why in the world would you want to work for Holt Enterprises? Annie visibly cringes. Why would anyone want to work for Holt Enterprises? I'm here to convince you not to close down my family's restaurant. Papa Holt sees them outside standing in front of a coffee cart and wonders why his son isn't conducting interviews. William quickly covers and tells his dad, this is Annie. She is a lawyer. And she has some passionate things to say about our company, but thanks for checking in. His dad's appeased and walks away, prompting William to ask Annie, work for me. My dad seems to think I need a lawyer babysitting me, but I disagree. So if you pretend to be my lawyer until Christmas, it'll get him off my back. She balks. I wouldn't work for you for $1 million. He jokingly says, what about two? Her face falls and he tells her, just kidding. I wouldn't pay you anything. She's appalled and says, then why should I work for you? He reminds her, you need my help. You do this for me and I'll save your parents' cafe. She's not entirely convinced until he assures her that he's a man of his word. He takes her silence as acceptance and says, great, see you tomorrow at 8 a.m. And he gives her outfit a once-over and adds, wear business attire.
That dress was fine. That's why I put it at the top of that section, because it was fine. It was a fine dress. Oh, let's just take a second to label the parallels in this scene to 2 weeks' notice. Courtyard, coffee, offering her a job, mistaking her as a lawyer that's trying to get a job at Holt Enterprises instead of 2 weeks' notices. Wade Enterprises. Oh,
and so save the building.
Save the building, yes. But in 2 weeks' notice, they're saving a community center. Yes. And in Christmas by Starlight, they're saving her parents' restaurant, which almost seems like a community center because people are always doing shit there that's not just eating.
Yeah.
Like making gingerbread houses.
With horrible,
shitty candy.
Jelly beans, yes. No nerds clusters there.
And if you guys haven't tried Nerds Clusters and you like nerds, I highly recommend them. I did not think that Nerds Clusters would be as great a thing in the world as they are, but they are fabulous. And everybody that's had them has pretty much like become addicted.
Yeah, I love nerds. I love gummies. I thought that a Nerds Rope was going to be amazing. I was wrong. I did not care for a Nerds Rope at all. I was like, okay, whatever. I don't get it. But Nerds Clusters are dangerous.
So were you like eating the Nerds Rope thinking they were going to be like Nerds Clusters?
Yeah, basically. I mean, the Nerds Rope was around before Nerds Clusters. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were talking about them on My Favorite Murder like a while ago. And I was like, oh, you know what? I think I had one time, but I was like, I should try it again. And I tried it again. And I was like,
Womp, 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 womp. And then your bestie introduced you to Nerds Clusters. You're welcome.
I actually knew about them before you did.
I learned about them from my sister on Christmas because I ate all of my nephew's bag. They were supposed to be in his stocking, and let me tell you that I had to buy him another bag before I left because he wasn't going to get anything in his stocking after Auntie stopped by.
You needed Nerds Clusters in your stocking, okay? It wasn't fair. That's all I'm saying. You
were just
distributing the wealth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Nerds Clusters. And I was like, what diabolical genius is sitting around somewhere going, what other kind of candy can I shove nerds on top of? What about jelly beans?
Oh, no, I don't care. No.
Anywho, next we see Annie breaking the news to her parents at the cafe. At first, they're apprehensive about this harebrained idea to pretend to be a lawyer. Well, you are a lawyer, her dad reminds her. But she knows she needs to pretend to be his lawyer, William Holtz. Their trepidation turns hopeful when Annie reminds them that this is the best shot they got to save the cafe. The next morning, Annie is waiting in the Holt Enterprises lobby where she is met by William. He appreciates her punctuality, and she tries to tell him what a harebrained idea this is when they are interrupted by Lyle. Lyle, 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 the godsend of an assistant. William introduces the two and struggles to explain what his title is. And Lyle informs Annie good-naturedly that he's William's personal assistant, life coach, style consultant, and younger, better-looking version of his Boswell. William scoffs and mumbles, well, maybe younger. And Lyle needs him to approve a photo for a news release and presents two headshots. One where William Holt is smiling warmly and the other where he is giving his quintessential Paul Campbell brow. We have discussed this at length in some previous episodes if you don't know what we're talking about. He tells Lyle the brow one because it makes me look determined. Annie clears her throat in protest. And when William takes the bait and asks her opinion, she informs him that his right eye is squinting, which conveys that he's hiding something, which you probably are, but you don't want to advertise it.
Yeah.
William's surprised by her insight and actually takes her advice before promptly beelining it out of the lobby with Annie following closely behind. I have to say it again because that is one of my favorite parts in 2 weeks' notice, which is the parallel of this scene where the Sandra Bullock scene. Is in front of Hugh Grant and he's got these exact identical two linen embossed envelopes and was trying to ask everybody in the office which one they like best. And everybody was like, they look the same. They look the same. They look the same. And Sandra Bullock, God love her, licked both of the envelopes and said, this one tastes better.
Yeah.
He was like, by golly, I'm giving you a bigger office.
I know. And I love how in this one, he's like, I don't care. They look the same. And then she's like, he's like, do this one. And she's like,
No, you look like a scoundrel.
Yeah.
A good-looking scoundrel, but a scoundrel nonetheless.
And I thought that was a good take on it.
Mm-hmm. Your squint is saying, I'm going to knock the shit out of your building and make you homeless. Mm-hmm. Annie and William are driven to a meeting while he fills her in. It's with the Preservation Society who lodged a complaint against Holt Enterprises. And they're kind of mad at us because we put a building on one of their historical bushes. Well, I'm just going to go in and give him the old razzle dazzle and smooth things over.
Oh, great.
And Annie's appalled. They should be mad at you. And you don't need me in there. You need a business law attorney. You know what? I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to sit there. William unfazed agrees. That's probably best. He's not intimidated by these folks. And cut to an angry man at a meeting table informing him that the bush was actually a bonsai tree that was given to the city by the Prime Minister of Japan as a symbol of peace after the war and was 400 years old. William, unmoved, jokes, oh, 400 years, that's a pretty long life though, right?
Oh my gosh.
Causing Annie to jump in. What he means is we are willing to throw a holiday fundraising gala where we will donate all the proceeds to the charity of your choice. When the table doesn't look significantly moved by this offer, she adds, and Holt Enterprises will match all the proceeds. This seems to appease them, and they accept. Back in the car, instead of being appreciative of Annie's quick thinking, William is critical. She reminds him that your razzle-dazzle didn't work, and he speculates loudly about how much his dad is going to hate this idea.
Oh, we'll just see about that, won't we?
Mm-hmm. We'll see about it because his dad loves it. Hey! He tells his son that the plan was brilliant. Not only do they make the lawsuit go away fairly cheaply, it will generate great press for the company. But they better get a move on since they only have a week before Christmas for this fundraiser. But wait. They only have a week to plan a gala and invite people and yada, you know the drill. Like, that's in Hallmark time. This is like 2.5 months.
Yes. They do magical galas in a week.
Oh, you know, I just want to be able to do that sometime and be like, I want to throw a party and it's done. Can you imagine? Like, I probably would have gotten married 7 times if planning parties this big were that easy. Oh. I'd just be like, okay. I don't really love you, but I want to have a party where I'm like the center of attention. So let's get married.
Or you could just have a birthday party. That also is a party where you are the center of attention.
Yeah, I don't think I've gone to enough weddings in my time. So I'm just going to like make my own wedding magic.
Okay.
I've had birthday parties. It's fine.
You could always marry yourself too. Let's
get married. That's true. Yeah. I do love myself. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyways, but they better get a move on since they only have a week and a lot of eyes are going to be on this project. He asks where they're planning on having the events, and just getting a venue last minute could be tricky, and Annie offers the Starlight Cafe, her parents' restaurant, as the perfect place for the function. William agrees and tells his dad he'll get a team on it, but Papa Holt wants William to handle it personally. If he can do this, it's a fair precursor to determine whether or not he can handle all the moving parts of running a company. He reluctantly agrees and leaves the meeting with a tickled Annie in tow. She knew it was a good idea, but her face falls when she finds out that William has no plans on actually planning the function himself. Since it was her idea, she gets to handle all the details.
Yay!
She protests. She's never organized anything like this, but she has no other choice. She finally agrees and makes him swear on it, that he's going to renew the lease for the Starlight Cafe. He does. She turns to leave, but he stops her. They have a meeting in conference room 3, and she realizes she still has to perform her pretend duties and be his lawyer, and she starts to protest, but remembers their agreement and reluctantly joins him.
Ugh.
So not only does she have to probably do her own family lawyerly stuff, she has to play pretend lawyer for Holt Enterprises and William, and now she's got to plan a motherfucking party for them.
You know, as Julian says on TCO, True Crime Obsessed, let the women do the work. Ugh. And what does one do when they have to throw together a last-minute fundraising gala? Why, they pick out the perfect Christmas tree. This is a Hallmark movie, after all. William and Anna.
Oh, my God. Are you so good? Caterers, drinks, decorations, a tree?
Yes.
Seriously?
A tree.
A tree is the first thing you do.
First thing.
I don't just get.
Numero uno.
Okay, go ahead. Maybe it'll make sense when we get to the end of this part. I'm sure it will. I'm absolutely positive it will.
William and Annie stand in the middle of a Christmas tree lot, which you say seems unseasonably busy. I've gone to plenty of Christmas tree lots that have that many people around in them.
A week before Christmas?
I don't know. There's people who choose not to get their tree until, like, Christmas Eve.
Oh, blasphemy. Blasphemy. It was, like, busy. It was, like, I don't know, like week after Thanksgiving busy, in my opinion, because there were like people just everywhere. And I was like, where are all these people? Where is your tree? You should already have it up and decorated in your house. It might be like slightly browning by now. That's how long I usually get my tree before Christmas.
Yeah. There are people everywhere. Apparently, a bevy of other people have last minute tree emergencies too. William asks, you think finding the perfect Christmas tree will make this party perfect? She smirks and says, a girl can dream. He seems really disinterested in participating, and she is surprised he's not getting all nostalgic and Christmassy around the trees. He informs her that he's never picked out a tree or decorated one for that matter. His dad's always hired people to take care of that. He sadly adds, probably because he was afraid I'd mess it up, which I probably would have. She sees the sad, disappointed little boy behind that comment and decides today is the day he's gonna find the right tree. Gosh darn it. She leads him to a cluster of large ones and tells him the three very important criteria for finding the right tree. Thank you, Hallmark, for your obligatory how to pick a tree advice, which is this time color. Fullness. I love Tam totally rolls her eyes every time. Like, oh no, more tree picking out tips. Yay. Yeah.
They didn't pull on the needles this time to see if they fell off. That's something they didn't talk about.
Yes. But she did talk about colorfulness and smell. And surprisingly, she punctuates the last word by snapping the end of a branch off and smelling it. He follows suit and breaks a couple of needles off of the tree, which practically blow away in the breeze when he tries to give them a sniff. She says, that was pathetic. You need to get in there. He gives it a valiant effort and instead of snapping off a bit of branch, fully pulls the tree over onto him, causing him to fall on the ground, much to Annie's delight. Their next project leads them down a quaint city street with a realtor. William is looking at property to potentially buy. The realtor asks him what he's looking to do with the space and he says, large storefronts, which causes Annie to scoff. He gives her a look that says, not the time, and she gives an apologetic wave. Since she's not needed for this piece of the day, she wanders away towards a small shop having a sale where she finds two tiny holiday costumes. Are they for elves? No. She's mulling over which of these to buy when William comes in, and she asks his opinion. He says, I think those would be pretty snug on you. She smiles and tells him, they're for Charles. He guesses, is Charles your baby or incredibly small boyfriend? She tells him it's her dancing partner, aka Terrier, aka Doggy. William asks why she scoffed when he told the realtor he wanted to build storefronts, and she tells him it's rather tone deaf to want to build huge skyscrapers when people are already struggling. The economy is rough and you'll put a lot of small stores out of business, like this one, she says. And she decides that she's going to buy both outfits and support the small independent business. Thank you very much. And then I'm very excited for this next part coming up. Yay, Tamara, take it away.
What? Well, I'm curious. Why are you excited about this next part?
I love this part. It's fantastic.
Oh,
it's so cute.
Next, we see William and Annie sitting at a fancy restaurant across the table from Ted, an older businessman. William has been trying really hard to get a meeting with him, and Ted knows most people want to do business with him. But he's not interested in getting involved with anyone who's building soulless skyscrapers or huge shopping centers. The city doesn't need any more of those. Annie stops what she's doing and gives William a knowing look. The whole time they were talking, Annie's been squinting at the menu and then successfully trying to flag down a waiter. Ted asks her what's wrong, and she tells both of them that my menu's in French, and she doesn't speak Frenchese. Will motions for her to put the menu down. He'll just order the usual. The first usual course gets placed in front of them, and Annie takes a mouthful of a lumpy brown mound. William informs her it's foie gras, duck liver, and her face stiffens around the bite. A short while later, she's in the coat closet fishing granola bars out of her jacket pocket when Ted finds her.
Yeah, she is.
He asks if she's got an extra granola bar, and she says, hell no, go find your own, because I will not be eating duck liver. Kidding. She hands him her extra bar, and when we see them again at the table, they're both sitting on the same side, sharing images on their phone. They are thick as thieves now, and William's face is unreadable as he watches the two palling around. It winds up that they both have terriers that they rescued, and Annie presents her most recent purchase for Charlie. She pulls out the doggy Santa suit, and Ted can't even.
Yes!
He declares how adorable it is, and Annie insists he keep it. Well, that officially makes them besties, so he invites her over for a Christmas party, proclaiming, my wife Gigi's gonna love you.
Aww.
Annie thinks fast and seamlessly folds William into the party invite, and they both happily agree.
Okay, okay, okay. Okay,
Whoa. Okay.
So first, the foie gras is just shitty tasting, right? And then she goes to the fucking coat closet to get granola bars out of her pocket, which is like fantastic chef's kiss. Then the fucking big money guy comes in and he's like, hey, you got one of those? And I'm like, yes, that is excellent right there. And then when she pulls out the doggy costumes and he freaks out over them, adorable. And she's like, you can have this one. And he's like, no, I couldn't possibly. And she's like, yes. And he's like, no, I couldn't possibly. And she's like, no, you take it. And fucking Will is looking on being like, what the fuck is going on here? What happened to my business meeting? And she automatically has an in with the guy on like multiple levels because of just ways that he couldn't even begin to relate. Plus that business guy being like freaking out over like a little Santa suit for his dog. Oh, chef's kiss.
I bet you William's thinking, what the hell were they doing in that coat closet to come back out like this? Eating granola bars. Back in the office, William's perturbed to find that they are storing the party Christmas tree in his office because the Starlight isn't ready for it yet. He peeks behind it as Annie makes a party checklist on a dry erase board. She has four things written on it. Venue, tree, decorations, invitations. What else are we missing? She wonders aloud, and William isn't being helpful. Dunno, it's hard to see anything from around this tree. Just then, Lyle comes in and says, holy Christmas tree, Batman. William asks what he wants, and he says he just heard there was a big old tree in the office and wanted to see it for himself.
Yeah.
Do we all get one next year? He asks. And William is not appreciating his humor. Lyle cuts to the chase and lets both of them know that the invitations have all gone out, and he's gotten quite a few RSVPs back, too. This doesn't ease Annie's jitters as she proclaims, great. Holding a fundraiser that solely has a Christmas tree at this point. Too much party talk makes William thirsty, and he announces to both of them that he's off to have drinks. Annie tries to protest, but decides against it. And once he's gone, Lyle looks at her list and helpfully suggests, you're going to need a photographer, music, event staff, gift bags, and most definitely a theme. Annie looks overwhelmed and repeats, a theme, of course. And apparently, nobody wants to eat or drink at this party? What the fuck? That's like the first thing on my list. Party, drinks, food. Jesus Christ, people.
Lyle and Annie obviously needed to consult with you.
You know, it kind of, spoiler, it kind of made sense when I was like, oh, you know what? Like, when I was getting all up in arms, because I got up in arms in quite a few places in this movie over this, like, food, say it with me, F-O-O-D, food, yelling at the TV screen.
Oh, interesting.
But a part of me was like, okay, well, you know, her parents run the restaurant. She's probably like, oh, they're going to cater, they're going to take care. Yeah. But of course they are. Yeah, they don't. But I, in the back of my, that was my appeasing, like, mantra.
Right.
That her parents are going to cater it. That's why nobody's talking about it. It's like not this big old thing that's blocking out a huge portion of the party that nobody can see but me. But that definitely wasn't the case.
It gets addressed, though. It gets addressed, and it ends up being a big deal. So,
Oh, shocking. I'm like, have you ever thrown a party, Annie, or been to a party before?
I'd go to a waffle party. I'm just saying is all.
Yeah. I mean, they just will get to it. We will get to the food. We will still get to it.
The next day, Annie and William are leaving a Holt ribbon cutting ceremony in a town car. She congratulates him. Impressive building. How many mom and pop shops did you put under to build it? He saucily replies, none. It used to be an orphanage. She scrunches her face and he assures her, you know, I'm not a monster. I don't wake up every day looking for ways to squash the little guy. Annie ignores this and instead asks him, do you need me for anything else today? He responds, nope, you're free. Annie is excited because she's got to come up with a theme. She asks, can you let me out? I have an errand to run. Will's curiosity is piqued. Oh, I'll take you. And they wind up at Conrad Toys. It's supposed to be FAO Schwartz, but I have to, man, if there's one thing that Hallmark does horribly is stores. Interiors of stores are terrible. I think they're okay with bookstores, but like with stores that have other products than books, like toy stores, you know, any kind mm-hmm. of other kind of products. Horrible, horrible, horrible. They did a somewhat decent job on this one, but that's only because they were trying to make it look like an FAO Schwartz, in which case it looks nothing like an FAO Schwartz, but almost passes as a toy store? ?
No, it doesn't. I was giving him a little grace. I was like, I see what you're trying to do here, but no. Like, F.A. Schwartz, if you've ever seen Big and that part where he goes into the toy store, like, that's F.A.O. Schwartz, and that's what they're going for. And it's sadly lacking.
Yes, but compared to other toy stores I've seen in Hallmark movies, it looks way more like a toy store than the other ones that I've seen.
Why don't they just ask a toy store to film, like, in their actual location?
I think
why do they have to try to build it out of nothing? Because, you know, they can't. A majority of the time why I think that their toy stores look so sad ass is because you need fixtures and you need big heavy things to be put in the wall, and they can't do that because they probably have to pay for it or ruin something. So just go to an existing location. Like, don't try to rebuild FAO Schwartz from the ground up, because you're just gonna fall short.
Yeah, I think part of it is probably toy copyright kind of business that they have to worry about that way. But still, I definitely agree with you. It's something that I have thought a lot about. I've spent too much time thinking about, actually.
Also, Hallmark movies don't do well at party planning. I'm just throwing that out there.
That is why we have ODK party planners, though. Hello.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. When Hallmark let you down, we are there to pick you up, ODK Party Planners, where we have all your food and beverage and everything else needs.
ODK Party Planners will never let you go hungry or thirsty. ODK Party Planners. All right. So they're at knockoff FAO Schwartz Hallmark style, which is Conrad's Toys. Annie is in heaven. And Will? Well, he's super excited by an ice cream vendor who's giving complimentary samples to the shoppers. Annie is appalled. You won't eat a granola bar if it's not organic, but you'll eat free ice cream that's meant for kids. He confirms, ice cream is good for anyone, anytime, anywhere. I bet you like, he narrows his eyes at her, vanilla. She scoffs and says to the person behind the counter, I'll have any flavor that's not vanilla. We never find out what he orders. We never find out what she orders.
It looked like strawberry.
Thank you. And while they munch their treats, she tells him her Conrad Toys origin story. When I was 4, I was adopted a couple of weeks before Christmas, and my new parents took me here. It's been a tradition for me ever since. William grimaces. Ah, I'm really regretting that orphanage comment from earlier. But she brushes it off. She continues with her story. My new parents let me pick out whatever I wanted that year. William sighs. I grew up with my dad's secretary doing all the shopping. He points to a giant plastic elephant next to them. Please tell me you got this. She laughs and shakes her head. No, all I wanted was the snow globe with a ballerina in it. It was simple, but I felt like I was supposed to have it. Like a little Christmas magic was at play. William's face lights up, and he exclaims, there's our theme, Christmas magic. Annie's face softens, and she agrees happily. I like it. There's hope for you yet, Billy Holt. And with that, they go to lunch. But this time, Annie insists on picking the place, because fuck that foie gras bullshit. They go to a barbecue food truck called Big Eddie's and eat outside in the very cold-looking afternoon. Annie informs William, this is how normal people eat. He jokingly says, I've seen the brochures, and points down the street. I used to go to private school just down there. Annie chuckles and says, I think I know what you were like in high school. She gives him a once-over. Captain of the whatever team, most popular and prom king. He laughs. No. And fishes around in his pocket for his phone. As he scrolls, he tells her, no one has seen this picture except Lyle, who may have stolen a copy for blackmail. And I wouldn't blame him if he does. I feel like Lyle at his job is like you at your job. Yeah, do a lot of everything and aren't appreciated nearly enough.
Mm-hmm. You have a boss that just looks at you and says, why aren't you doing more?
Yeah.
Not my job, not my job, and not my job.
And also, super talented, super smart, super cute. Bam, bam, bam. Also, same there. I might as well just call you Lyle from now on.
I like it.
Will produces a photo of a chubby teenage boy with short hair and very rosy cheeks, smiling in a cap and gown. He divulges, "And I never went to prom." She's surprised, but since he showed her his, she feels obligated to show him hers. This is a Hallmark movie. Shh.
Winky, winky.
She flips her screen around to show a very enthusiastic 8-year-old with, like, I swear she's got her jazz hands out, wearing colorful tights. And he asks, chuckling, "Were you an administrative assistant to a circus company?" She shakes her head and admits that she was really, really into ice skating and took it very seriously. They both admit that they have come a long way and grow quiet as they contemplate how wrong their initial assumptions were about their childhood experiences. The next day, Annie is at Starlight Cafe, and as her mom ogles a photo of Will with the waitress, they all realize that they don't have any food for the event. Ding, 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 ding. This is Tamara yelling from the rafters.
Ding, 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 ding.
Food.
Ding, ding.
Food.
Ding, 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 ding.
It has completely slipped Annie's mind. But not Tamara's, because they were having it at a restaurant, but a restaurant that only serves breakfast, not appropriate for a $1,000 a plate fundraiser. Actually, that sounds like a good time.
Oh my God, yes. Oh, we got a TM.
She rushes to Holt Enterprises to hash this teeny tiny detail over with William, but he's out playing squash with his father. Of course he is. Has he not heard of lacrosse? Come on!
He doesn't go out and play lacrosse with his father, Corinne, because they're playing it in the office all day long.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He doesn't need to leave the location to go play lacrosse.
Fortunately, the ever steadfast Lyle is there, and he asks her, "What's going on?" And she verbally diarrheas on and on about how she stupidly forgot about the food for their function. Lyle recognizes a panic attack and gently leads Annie out of the office. They need space to properly solve this dilemma. They go to a nearby coffee shop where they are joined by Lyle's lovely husband, Michael. He's a psychiatrist extraordinaire and could be a food blogger based on all the eating out they do. Michael hears all of Annie's trials and tribulations around the party and asks what kind of food she likes. Annie confesses to having the palate of a 5-year-old, preferring sliders, mac and cheese, and chicken strips. Also not appropriate for a fundraiser, but appropriate for a fundrager. Thank you very much.
Ooh, yes.
Michael asks what Will would like, and she says foie gras. She does not understand him. He's afforded all these advantages on a silver platter and still acts like he wants to flip it over. Michael analyzes Will and says maybe he's a foie gras man. Ugh. Foie gras. Why'd you have to choose that? Maybe he's a foie gras man with a chicken tender heart. AKA, he does what's expected of him, not necessarily what he wants to do. Annie mulls this over before the fellas get a banger of an idea. Will gifted them with a dinner for their anniversary. It's a local Italian place that's nearby. It caters and is William approved, since he sent them there after all. They all leap from the table, fists in the air, and yell, "Party plate planning activate!" Their hands clap in the air. They freeze mid-air. There's lots of air and excitement, and they are off. But when the trio gets back, we don't see that part. When the trio gets back from Holt Enterprises, they are besties, talking and laughing. Another pair of men that now adore Annie, and rightfully so. She is awesome. William sees them and seems sad he missed out on a good time. He asks Annie if she needs him. He's got the whole afternoon free, but she declines. Now the party planning is under control. She asks if he needs her anymore. she'd like to get ready for Ted's party and asks what the dress code is. He says, it's a party, super casual. He lets her go for the day and she happily heads out saying, see you tonight. And the reason why I said this whole thing was she asks him what the dress code is. He says, it's a party, super casual. And now Tamara gets to read and I get to delight in her telling another favorite section of this movie. Yay! Mm. Regale me.
Which is that evening at the party. Annie and William meet outside of Ted's porch. William's wearing a velvet smoking jacket and Annie's wearing a granny cottagecore ugly sweater. When Will sees it, he gives her an emphatic, oh, no, 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 no. She starts to panic, reminding him that he said it was casual. Casual! He says, yes, casual dinner party, not casual bingo night at the Legion. But it's too late. Ted has seen them and ushers them inside. Annie self-consciously takes off her jacket, but Ted and his wife Gigi love the sweater and think she's a hoot.
Yeah!
In fact, Gigi has one just like it and decides to haul them out of the closet. Next, we see a few of the partygoers and the host donning ugly sweaters that could rival Annie's.
Yay!
Gigi asks her how the fundraising dinner is going, and Annie says, good, but she's worried about how much money they'll actually make. Ted tells her that's the easy part and coaxes Annie towards the center of the room and tells everyone that this is Annie. She's throwing a gala this Tuesday for the Preservation Society, and I would consider it a personal favor if all of you would attend with me and Gigi. Although Annie appreciates the support, William finds her a short while later on the porch alone, fretting. He says he should have known she left when the life went out of the party, but she doesn't acknowledge the compliment. She's freaking the fuck out and tells him, my family's restaurant has a capacity of 95 tables, he asks. No, people. And we already had that amount before Ted graciously invited these 50 guests. We don't have room for them. William is appalled that she could overlook something so huge. Really, I'm not, because she looked over the goddamn food.
Well, she's not a party planner, but I understand. Food, yes, I know. She's not ODK Party Planning Services. I got it.
I think food is just the forefront of our lives, period, because we're like, will there be food there? It is a museum opening. Will there be food? Oh, it's a art gallery open. Will there be food? It's a musical recital. Will there be cookies there?
Will there be refreshments? Yes, because I want some dessert for sitting through this stodgy music.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that is why I'm guessing that the food is the forefront to us, even though we are definitely not party planners. I mean, we weren't until we opened ODK Party Planners. Previously to that, it would be like food, beverages, refreshments, cocktails, appetizers, and on and on and on and on. Anywho, William's appalled, and Annie's appalled right back that he was going to tear down a building that he had no knowledge of. They argue back and forth until Annie leaves in a huff.
In a huff!
In a huff! But not before telling him that she will take care of this shit, unlike him who constantly has things handed to him. She's going to take care of it because there's only one person Annie can count on, and that is herself.
Mm.
She throws her jacket open towards him, and she adds before huffing away, this sweater was a hit.
She subverted that whole party. She transformed it into like amazing fun, where before it was just this reserved hodgepodge. That's not the right word.
Yes,
but reserved gathering.
She has those, like, just those moments with her. You know what I wanted to say earlier and I fucking forgot is the one Annie dress wardrobe faux pas. This was not one of it. I thought her sweater was great. Everybody loves a good ugly holiday sweater.
And she is dressed like pretty nicely throughout this entire thing, including like that.
Yes.
Oof. At the end. Mm.
Yep.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
Agree. Except when she takes Will to the barbecue joint and they're eating outside from a barbecue truck.
Yeah.
She's eating barbecue with her gloves on. I know it's probably cold out there, but when they're swapping photos, she takes off her glove to scroll through her phone to show them her picture of when she was doing the ice skating administrative assistant for the circus. But then after that, she puts the glove back on, continues eating her barbecue. Who eats barbecue with gloves on? Who?
Apparently she does, but I totally agree with you. I did not notice that, but if I did, I would have been like, but the gloves!
Yeah, again, food focused over here.
Although some people eat barbecue with a knife and a fork, so there you go.
They were, like, that's when I was like, okay, they're making it like she's eating pulled pork with a fork, therefore why wouldn't she have her gloves on? Because it's cold outside, yada, yada, yada. And I'm just like, still, you don't eat barbecue with gloves on. Although I don't live in Chicago, so it might be easier said than done. Coming from a California girl that doesn't realize you might get frostbite if you take those gloves off.
I don't know. I think the pulled pork will keep you warm. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. The next day, Annie hears a clattering, and from the rooftop arose such a clatter. Okay, actually, it was in her parents' driveway, but is it St. Nick? Find out with us after the break. The clattering that Annie heard from her parents' driveway was William. He's there at her parents' house, and how did he know where her parents lived? Anyways, we're not going to wonder about that.
I say money. He just has money. He knows these things. He just like, I got money. Where does she live? Okay, thank you.
Lyle, fetch me Annie's parents' address, please.
Exactly.
But Williams accidentally knocked over a couple of snow shovels into her parents' trash cans. She asks, what are you doing here? And he admits some of the things she said the night before were true, and he wants to help. Not like shoveling the walk help, like helping with the party help. Annie tries brushing him off until her mom pops up above them on a balcony and invites Will up for breakfast. Annie gives him a don't you fucking dare look, but William ignores this and calls up, I'd love to. Upstairs over waffles, William charms Annie's parents, and mom says, you were right, Annie, he is charming. Annie protests, I didn't say he was charming. Helen did. William smiles, I like Helen. Mom nods, oh, that's right. You said he was handsome. That was you, she hisses. And although William would like to sit here and hear 45 minutes more of compliments, Annie has a crisis to attend to. She gets up to leave and Will offers to come with her. She does not want his help, but her parents encourage her to accept his offer, and she practically rolls her eyes into the back of her head, but agrees. What was a crisis that she was doing?
And we find out about this right now.
I know, that's why I read it and I was like, that's right, bitch. I read the next line and I was like, Tamara, were you not paying attention to this when you watched the movie, wrote the outline, read the outline, revised the outline, or watched the movie again?
Same. Oh my gosh. Okay. Once at the cafe, they toss around far-fetched solutions like putting people on the restaurant roof, the high school gymnasium, and the out-of-business bookstore next door. Dad overhears this last suggestion and admits, hey, that's not bad. He goes to a sliding metal door on the restaurant wall, wheels it back. Oh, it reveals a portal between the two building spaces. Oh.
I can't even with this because she's been at that restaurant her whole life. The cafe is part of her family, practically. She must have known or seen that rollaway door. And so when they're like, oh, shit, there's 95 people and we have 50 more, I'd be like, what's behind that door? Is there more space that we can use? But no, it's just like the food debacle.
Or maybe she thought that her dad might be a serial killer and behind that door was actually a closet full of bodies. Just saying.
Oh, then best to leave it unopened.
Exactly.
Then. Yeah,
exactly. You know, just like you like your dad, you don't want to mess things up on that front. So ignorance can be bliss at times. I'm just saying this all.
And we did leave a part out where everyone was begging to know what was in his waffles that made him so good. Section of fried green tomatoes where they were cooking people and serving a muffin barbecue, and Annie's dad could just look at her and be, secrets in the sauce.
Oof. But fortunately, I don't think Annie's dad does make sauces, so we can just relax on that front.
And he's probably not a murderer. I'm gonna venture a guess.
Okay, fair enough. Annie's dad reveals that the two places are joined because the building used to be a huge market back in the day. It's the perfect solution. But Tamara thinks the bookstore is Hallmark messy and thinks it should take 45 minutes to clean out. I love that term, Hallmark messy, because I agree with you, generally speaking, about Hallmark messy, where they're like, oh no, this place is so messy, whatever are we going to do? And I'm like, there's just two crates with like some burlap over it. This is, we can fix this, okay?
Yeah. You haven't seen my closet. That shit is nothing.
Uh-huh. But I actually think that the bookstore does look kind of trashed and has more junk in it than it should for a vacant store. Because it's got, like, you know, bookcases on the ground and all over on top of each other and, you know, stuff like that.
Give me three people that have burly arms and I'll have that place clean in an hour.
Okay, great. I'm glad that Tamara's cleaning service... Because ODK is not going to be involved in this one because the I don't know, the K of ODK or the D, dry, that's me. I'm going to be like, I'm not cleaning. Sorry.
Oh, pish. I'm not offering cleaning services. I'm saying if there was a gala that I had to prepare for and I needed to clean out a space, that's what I would do. I'm not like... Hire me for only $35 an hour. I will make your spot spick and span. You can count on Tam.
Spick and span. You can count on Tam. See, you even have your own jingle.
Oh my God. I am so much more than just a house cleaner. Thank you for that, though.
When you're worried about the dirt being too much mert, spick and span, you can count on Tam.
Oh my God, no. Let's just stop right there. We don't need, no. No, 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 no.
I need to workshop it a little, but I think you can have an excellent jingle.
No, you don't. You do not need to workshop it at all. Moving on.
Okay, so anywho, I think it would definitely take more than 45 minutes or an hour to clean out all the junk and clean the floors, etc. Now that the crisis is averted, though, with their solution, Annie tries to ditch William, but Dad, the meddler, asks Will, you should stay and join us for a concert we're having this evening. William wants to spend more time with Annie, so he agrees. But, Annie's gotta go home and get ready. Will, seeing an opportunity, says, well, why don't I go with you? I'm only in the way here. Annie sighs, but resigns herself to him tagging along. Once there, they enter through the door, and Annie says to William, hang back. Charlie can be skittish around new people. But Charlie barks a couple of times, ruff, ruff, and bounds happily up to Will. The two become instant best friends. Will gives Charlie the best kind of scratches, while Will says to Annie, he likes it when you scratch him on the belly. It makes him super happy. Doesn't it, Charlie? You're such a good boy. You're such a good boy. Annie sighs and goes into her room to change. Once Will and the pup are alone, he picks up Charlie, murmuring into his ears, you got one of the good ones. And he checks out all the family photos through the year on her mantle. He puts down Charlie and Annie joins him as he spies the snow globe. The snow globe. And asks if this is the snow globe. She confirms it is. And he asks her if he can pick it up. And she says, go for it. He picks up the snow globe, shaking it, looking at the tiny dancer with the little Santa hat on it appreciatively. Annie excitedly says, the snow sparkles like that because it's crushed pearls. She then remarks sadly, the dancer used to spin too, but I lost the key. He asks what happened, and she recounts, I used to wear it around my neck, and then one day it was just gone. My dad and I looked everywhere for it, and to be honest, I'm not sure who was more heartbroken over the missing key, me or my dad. She shakes her head solemnly. I cried for days. A silence falls between them, and they look at each other for a moment with a sweet intimacy. The kiss tractor beam almost flicks on, but Annie breaks the spell by excusing herself to feed the dog. Back at the Starlight, the concert is an early 20-something-year-old who practically grew up at the cafe, they say, singing carols with an acoustic guitar. Her real name is Maria Aragorn, and she's a local singer-songwriter to Winnipeg in Canada America, which is where the movie was filmed. She sings a beautiful rendition of Silent Night as Annie and William watch. as the music falls softly around them. Silent night, holy night. He whispers to her, what time should I be there to set up? She responds, you don't have to help. Don't worry. I've got this. But he assures her he wants to, if she'll let him. She finally relents, and with a small smile, she tells him 8, as the final notes of Silent Night linger in the background. Sleep in heavenly peace.
You know, I just can't get over the fact that Annie wanted a snow globe when she was 4 years old. She didn't want a Rainbow Bright doll or a Barbie or coloring crayons or... A snow globe's kind of boring.
I had a snow globe when I was a kid and I was obsessed with it. I got it in my...
Oh, see, that makes so much sense.
I got it in my stocking. It was a little plastic one and I loved it so much. Yeah. So, I don't know.
That's why so many years later, she loves Hallmark movies. And Tamara's just like, I don't get it. Snow globe? Seriously?
Okay. I'm like, look, there's little snowflakes falling down. It's so magical.
And at one point in this story, I was like, da-da-da-da, shitstorm. And then I had this banner idea. I was like, do they have shitstorm snow globes? I looked them up. They do not. Probably because they would not sell.
I was going to say, that is not magical. That is not whimsical. I mean, it's something that I think would sell to like a little degree. I'm sure you could find it at like Spencer's Gifts. So if you want to create that, then, you know, great. But my heart will not allow that for me in my life.
Corinne, snow globe. Tamara, shitstorm.
Yeah, exactly.
The next morning, she's pacing in front of the closed bookstore. She gets on her phone to call William and she says, hey, it's just me. I was wondering, a voice from a few feet away answers, if I'm still handsome and charming? It's him. He's made it. She smiles relieved and he understands why she didn't think he'd come, because he's been a work-dodging jackass for a majority of the time that she's known him. They go inside and get to party prepping. Eventually, a whole slew of people appear to help clean and haul stuff out. Lyle arrives and is shocked to see William enthusiastically sweeping the floor. He murmurs to Annie, whoa, you don't see that every day, and moseys over to offer him food. There's lunch available if he's hungry. He tells Lyle he'll pass until the floor is clean, and when they have a moment alone, Lyle points out that William may have made a promise to Annie that he can't keep, and asks him to consider if someone's gonna get hurt. His boss will not hear it and instead passes him a large trash bag to haul out instead. Behind them, Annie gets an upsetting phone call. The caterers have canceled on her. She rushes outside in a panic. William follows. She tells him, I called them to tell them about the additional guests and they said they couldn't accommodate them. What in the Hallmark hell? Somebody wants more business and more food and they're like, I'm sorry, just can't. You know what? Did we say we're going to cater it? Fuck you. We're out. Golly.
That happens.
These dilemmas.
I have experience with party planning, doing different meetings and stuff like that. And yeah, they'll only serve up to a certain amount and stuff.
Right. But they already have like the funds and, or, you know, they've probably already bought the food. It's a couple of days before the event. I would just be like, hey, we can only accommodate X amount of people. Like, let's give you that. You asked for it. You wanted it. We'll give it to you. And I'd be like, you're not living up to the agreement that we had. And so we're backing away, backing away, backing away, backing away. Anyways, serendipitously, Lyle passes by with a plate of barbecue proclaiming how delicious it is. And a light bulb pops over Annie's head. She has an idea. She beelines it to the barbecue truck. It's the same barbecue truck she took Will to, and she asks the owner if he caters. He doesn't, but he'll make an exception for Annie. She tells him it's on Tuesday for 100 people, and before he can say done and done, Will steps in and opposes the idea. She can't possibly feed high society people grilled meats from a food truck. She assures him that that's exactly what she plans on doing, and she's going to park the truck right in front of the building and serve the guests right from it. She won't have it any other way, and William knows he's tasked her to plan this shit, so he reluctantly agrees. And Eddie, the food truck owner smiles at Will and says done and done because he and his meats are on board.
And Lyle approves too. He thought that shit was delicious.
Everybody thought that shit was delicious. Mm-hmm. It's just the appearance of, oh, barbecue from a truck. You really want moi to eat barbecue from a truck? I don't think people are that pretentious. For $1,000 a plate, like, I think people don't expect to get like $1,000 worth of food, but
no,
that may be where Will's mindset is.
But I will say there should be a certain quality to it, but I think his barbecue is like super delicious. So, At the end of the night, the bookstore is cleaned, prepped, and ready. William can't believe they finished. Tamara can. The space is transformed from a junk-filled dust ball to a twinkle light-filled Christmassy venue. And Annie tells him it's the power of community. He asks if she has plans, because he'd like to take her to a cool place nearby. She agrees, and he surprises her with an ice skating rink. He has single-handedly upped the romance between the two of them. Her love of figure skating has been mentioned several times throughout the movie, so he took an ice skating rink he owns, festooned it with twinkle lights, and this rink easily goes down as the most decorated ice skating rink I've ever seen in a Hallmark movie. There are 5 Christmas trees.
Cluttered.
Cluttered. A nativity scene, a glowing star of the east, larger than life nutcracker cutouts, and giant presents and festive green and red bars of light, in addition to the red carpet that was rolled out so that he could walk her blindfolded onto the ice without any accidents, with a park bench and a blanket sitting in the center of the ice.
Where the hell are you going to skate? That's what I want to know. Where are you going to skate at?
There's plenty of room to skate. He set it up just for her. So the two of them, there's plenty of room to skate. This is not a group skate situation. Mm-hmm. What? 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 What's going on there? What's going on?
I just said, I know how clumsy I am. Remember getting hit in the face with a fucking
lacrosse ball.
So I see that and I'm just like, accident, trip and fall, accident, stumble, trip, accident.
Magic, twinkle lights, romantic, gesture.
I don't care how twinkly the lights are if I'm ass first on the ice because I fell.
Well, you are not the target audience for this romantic gesture. I hate to disappoint you, Tamara.
Fair, and I also haven't ice skated in years because last time I did it with you, I lasted 2 seconds because my ankles are awful. You can't put all of this body on 2 tiny blades. It just does not work.
I think there was something going on with your skates. That's my conspiracy theory of it all, but, you know, whatever.
I think there's something going on with your skates.
Okay, yes, I do. I agree. There was something going on with my skates. But you know what's going on?
Talking about figuratively speaking.
You know what's going on with Annie's skates? They're going on her feet. Us also, Will's skates are also going on his feet so that they can possibly skate and at the skating rink.
That's okay, I'll allow it.
So Annie is thrilled and filled with wonder at having the private ice skating rink moment, as opposed to Tamara, who would be filled with terror.
The horror.
They both put on skates and Annie glides across the ice doing a little spin as William unsteadily clunks towards her and almost falls. She gives him some shit. What? You have an ice skating rink, but you don't know how to skate? He retorts, I have a pulp factory and I don't know how to make paper either. They flirt shamelessly on the ice until William talks her into showing him her signature move, because she took ice skating lessons for years. She scoffs. She does not have a signature move. Kidding, yes. Yes, she does. But she can't do it without a partner. He opens his arms wide. Try me. I'm a quick steady. And since he seems to have gotten his skating legs under him and is much more steady on the ice now, she skates towards him and directs her to lift her up on 3. She counts, he lifts, or tries to, and almost drops her. She falls into his arms, and they have a moment before he says, I ruined your move. She says, I still did the trick, and they smile at each other with hearts in their eyes. After skating, they return to the starlight as Annie has to grab some things. Will asks, are you hungry? You know, we haven't eaten all day. And she is. I know a great place, she says cheekily, and they go inside the cafe where Will whips up some grilled cheese sandwiches. He admits, I may not be able to ice skate, but I can whip up a decent grilled cheese. While they eat, Will thanks Annie for all that she's done and asks, did you always want to be a lawyer? Annie shares, yeah, and family law seemed like a good fit, given my own history. You know, when I was 4, I got adopted, and when we were riding home, I was terrified that it would all slip away. I felt so lucky to be chosen by a family, but it also didn't feel real, almost fragile. Will looks at her softly. That's a lot for a 4-year-old to carry. And Annie agrees. Yeah, but because of when I was adopted, I am so fond of Christmas. It's when I got to meet my new parents, and I've had such a feeling of gratitude towards them ever since. Will asks, how's your fear now of possibly having everything slip away? She looks at him seriously and admits, present. The hearts in his eyes are practically boop, boop, boop-ing out as he whispers, it doesn't have to be. And the expression on her face reads that she is feeling something more warm than the grilled cheese in her belly.
Yeah, grilled cheese sounds so good right now. Let not grilled cheese. Oh, yes, please, grilled cheese. A little later, William goes to the office to try to convince his father to save the cafe. But his dad's resolve is steeled because they've already invested $2 million in the project. William implores his father to take another look at it. What Annie's family has done with the cafe is truly remarkable. His father asks, who is Annie? And Will reminds him that she's our lawyer. Papa Holt is understandably worried and voices his concerns. That sounds like a huge conflict of interest if our lawyer's family owns the cafe we're about to demolish. William tries to assure him that that's not the case, but Pop is adamant. So William backpedals a bit and does what he should have done all along, which is tell the truth. He informs his dad that Annie's not really his lawyer. He just asked her to pretend so that he wouldn't have to hire a real one. And she's been doing a banger job on planning that fundraiser. His dad's confused because he specifically put William on that project. He backpedals again, assuring his dad with the weak argument of, but I've been helping with the party.
Yeah.
His father's disappointed, but not surprised, and lets his son know as much. This is William's default setting. Fuck around and try to get away with as much as possible. Oof. His dad assures him that Holt Enterprises will conduct business as usual. The cafe goes. As he walks away, William looks like his eyes are watering, because could he have possibly grown a conscience?
Aww.
Meanwhile, back at the cafe, Annie's drafting a text trying to encompass her feelings about last night. She types, last night was special. Grimaces and then accidentally hits send.
No!
She then panics, saying, no, 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 delete, 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 while simultaneously trying to delete it. But it gets to its intended audience. At Holt Enterprises, William's still reeling from the conversation with his dad when his phone pings. He reads the text and his face doesn't light up. He looks concerned. Lyle walks up behind him and points out that his office Christmas tree is finally getting carted away. Aren't you glad? Lyle asks. But William admits sourly that he kind of got used to it.
Aww.
Lyle knows when his boss is hiding something and asks accusingly, what did you do? William shakes his head and says sadly, I didn't do anything. I don't think there's anything I can do. Lyle reads between the lines and knows exactly what he means and walks away a little disgusted.
Aww. Oh, Lyle, we love you. You are so underappreciated.
Yes, you are.
William goes to the cafe to face the music. The place is completely transformed and looks fit for a gala. He finds Annie and tries to come clean, but she stops him. There stands his office Christmas tree in the middle of what used to be the bookstore. It has lights on it, but nothing more. She says, I know Christmas was kind of a look but don't touch situation in your house, so I thought you could help me decorate this tree. He looks touched by the gesture and agrees. She hands him the first ornament, which is wrapped in a box. He takes it out. It's a Christmas tree snow globe ornament with his initial at the base. He chuckles and she shakes her head and says, it seems fitting. Now, don't be afraid. You got this. He places it carefully on a branch. And I was like, you did not place it far enough on the branch. That's a heavy ornament. Heavy ornaments need to be on either really thick branches or like towards the back. I'm just saying.
Let's give you the ODK tree decorating tips.
Yes.
First thing, if it's a heavy ornament, don't put it at the tip. Heavy ornament, no tip.
Just the tip. No, not just the tip. You gotta move it to the base. Move it to the base.
To the shaft, if you will.
Yes. She asks him, how did that feel? And he admits, good. He likes it at the tip and the shaft. She smiles and joking/not joking tells him, good, because there's about 300 more to go. She leaves him to finish the tree. And by the time the ornaments are all on, he's a pro. She comes back over to check his work and admits, you did a good job. But then she gets serious. Today's our last day working together, she tells him sadly. This was the best fake job I've ever had. William has the sudden but inevitable betrayal on the tip of his tongue, but chooses not to say anything. She bids him good night, saying they'll see each other tomorrow one last time for the party. Much later that night, as Annie's father is closing the shop, he sees William quietly trying to sneak in a bunch of Christmas decor that Will very well may have taken from the skating rink, ? Into the venue space. He smiles, shakes his head, and leaves him to his covert operation. The next night, the gala is in full swing at the Starlight. William is making his rounds, meeting and greeting everyone when Annie walks in the door, and she is wearing a stunning red satin floor-length dress. How much do we like this dress, Tam?
That is a 10 out of 10, Corinne.
Yes. It is fantastic. It is classic looking. It is old Hollywood. Oh, so good.
Mixed with a bit of contemporary old Hollywood meets new world. Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss. So she's wearing a stunning red satin floor-length dress. And when he sees her, she takes his breath away.
Because she's a lady in red.
Yes! Oh my gosh, so perfect. He comes over and tells her how great she looks. And before she can repay the compliment, he opens his tuxedo jacket to reveal an ugly Christmas sweater vest. How much do we like his look? How much do we like the sentiment of his look?
It's beautiful. Beautiful sentiment.
10 out of 10.
He's not getting a pass, though, because he was talking shit about her sweater. So.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 on the sentiment front. On the look front. But yes.
Yep.
She chuckles at the pleasant surprise and tells him he looks perfect. But that's not the only surprise he has for her. He asks her to close her eyes and leads her towards the bookstore side of the venue. When she opens her eyes, she realizes he's recreated Conrad's toys in the space. Turns out he didn't deconstruct the skating rink decor after all. He just bought all of Conrad's, maybe? I don't know.
Question mark?
Yeah.
Question mark, question mark.
She can't believe it and looks truly touched as she drinks it all in. He gazes at her and says softly, just wanted to give you some Christmas magic. Now, come on. I didn't bring you here just to stand in the doorway. And they venture into the toy wonderland for a closer look. A short while later, Papa Holt is making a speech thanking everyone for coming and reminding everyone that this is all for a great cause. So eat, drink, and dance. The same young lady from the concert night strums her guitar and begins singing O Holy Night. As she starts singing, O Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining. William asks for Annie's hand to dance, and they sway around the dance floor. She wants to thank him. When he asks, for what? She admits, for a lot of things, actually. For starters, that sweater vest, and for making me laugh so hard my cheeks hurt. For really showing up for me, and mostly because of the way you make me feel. But they are interrupted by Michael and Lyle, who come over and gush at her and her dress, as they should. William is also pulled away by Ted and Gigi, who compliment him on the very unstuffy party. Ted waxes poetic about the history and bones of the building and surrounding areas and says, oh, it's going to be disappointing to see it demolished. Annie catches this last piece, and as the last note of the song hangs over the room, oh, night divine, she looks at William for confirmation that what she heard was correct, but his face says it all. She shakes her fist at the sky and cries, "Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal!" And she leaves in a huff.
In a huff!
With him following closely after. They are alone in the cafe entryway when she finally stops and he tells her, "I tried really hard," but she's not buying it. "Did you really? Because when I make a promise, I keep it. I follow through. And I trusted you, and you broke that trust. You know why people don't color outside the lines? Because it makes everything messy." Harkening back to a conversation they had earlier where he gave her a hard time and was like, "Come on, do the thing. Color outside the lines."
Mm-hmm.
And she leaves because she's like, she drops that mic. Bam. Mm. Coloring outside the lines makes everything messy. Done.
"You think this dress looks good from the front? Now you could watch me leave in it." Back at home, Annie's regaling her father about the "curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal" moment. She's in tears on the couch, apologizing for not fixing everything. He's heartbroken seeing her so sad and tells her that it was never her responsibility to make things better. It was his. He was the father, and he shouldn't have let her try in the first place. She's reeling over the changes and losing a part of their family and her childhood. The restaurant was everything, where they spent their holidays, where they had so many memories. Her dad downplays it and reminds her that it's just four walls and a roof, and even if it's gone, they still have each other. But he reads what's behind her heartbreak, and it's not just the restaurant. Dad says sagely, "If we're talking about what I think we are, walls are not good if you build them around yourself, because a heart that doesn't know pain can't know love and all the wonderful things that come with it.
Aww.
We are so proud of you, and nothing you can do will ever change that." She sniffles loudly and asks, "Even when I dance around with my dog in my pajamas?" And Dad jokingly says, "Well, that was pushing it." But he's just kidding, and they hug it out, tell each other, "I love you," and it seems to make her feel a tiny bit better.
Aww.
The next day, William's at his desk at work when Lyle brings him a gift bag with a note. He plops it into his boss's hands. "Annie left this for you a couple of days ago." The note attached to the gift says, "I would have gone to prom with you," and inside the tissue paper is a folding frame. On one side is William's rosy cheek graduation picture that she shared with her, and on the other is a not quite as awkward photo of Annie in her graduation attire. William is touched by the thoughtful gift, but assures Lyle that there's nothing he can do. He doesn't own the company. His assistant has had it with the excuses and tells him, "I'm going to say this as a friend, but your whole life, you've had somebody there to catch you when you fall or pick up your messes. But I know that if you don't fix this, she will never forgive you, and I know that will cause you to never forgive yourself." William contemplates this for a few moments before telling Lyle, "Get me everything we have on the Starlight property, print and digital."
Ooh.
Lyle happily retrieves it, and next we see William drawing lines, checking plans, and making one very important phone call. A short while later, he goes into his father's office with plans in hand. His father tries to apologize for not being able to fully talk about the circumstances around the Starlight Cafe and the stern words, but William stops him. He informs his father that the plans for demolition have been halted because he put in a submission to designate the property on and around the Starlight Cafe with historical designation. He adds, "It's a long shot, but until they fully go over the proposal, we have to halt demolition." His dad looks at him confused, and William tells him that his days of creating soulless, faceless skyscrapers are done, that he's realized that the Starlight Cafe has done more for the community than all of their high-rises combined, and he will be damned if he's going to be part of a business that doesn't put people and communities first, even if it means he's no longer part of Holt Enterprises.
Aww.
On this day, William is putting the little guy first, and instead of being pissed, his dad looks somewhat impressed at his son's conviction and asks him what he has in mind.
Ooh, what does he have in mind? Well, we're going to find out.
Mm-hmm.
With a plan in hand, William hurries to the Starlight Cafe to find Annie. She's not in the main dining room, and he asks Helen to speak with her. Helen can't even. She announces to the Starlight patrons, "This is William Holt. He's the one that's going to tear this cafe down." And a handful of customers at the bar turn around and glare at him. They like their motherfucking waffles. Back off. He sheepishly looks back and says, "Yes, I was the one trying to tear down the place. It was my company, and that's what they do. But that all changed when I met a very incredible woman. Annie's parents are behind the counter and he refers to them directly. Your daughter. Just then, Annie has come from the stockroom and hears William spiel and decides to hang back to hear what else he says. He continues, she taught me the importance of community, history, and family, but I'm an idiot. Helen chimes in, you're right about that. But William pushes on undeterred. I know I've made a mess of things with her, and let's face it, I probably don't deserve her in the first place. But she saw me for who I was, and it was enough for her. But I broke her trust, and I may never get it back, but I can keep my word. This cafe will never get torn down. I can guarantee that. He turns to leave just as Annie comes from behind the wall she was listening at. She calls him out, asking, is everything you said true? He assures her it is, but she wants to make really, really sure and says, I'm feeling all kinds of feelings right now. Are you really sure everything you said is true? Because I want to believe you, but I don't know if I could trust you. But I want to trust you. Because thinking of my life without you makes me really, really sad. He looks at her for a beat before saying, those are a lot of words. Then he takes her into his arms and plants a nice, soft kiss on her forehead. I mean, on her mouth.
Oh, God, no, no.
And it's a good one because Kimberly Susted and Paul Campbell both give good kiss. Amen to that. ODK agrees, uh-huh. 10 out of 10. Next, we see Christmas Day. The cafe is completely covered in gingerbread houses, presumably decorated by the kids, which Tamara doesn't buy because they were pristine. Some of them are condos and hotels, for God's sakes. But we do actually see that the dad was building a big one that was like two stories by himself.
I know. That's where I want to know, like, which one of those is the kids, because those are better gingerbread houses than I would ever make. And I'm a graphic designer.
I think you'd make an amazing gingerbread house. There is at least one, if not more, movies about a gingerbread house baking competition.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Oh, no, there's more. One's a life-size gingerbread house. Not life-size, but like, you know, like big children's playhouse size. Yeah. Oh, okay. Come on, Corinne, focus. We're almost at the end. Okay. Oh, distracted by gingerbread houses. And yes, Tamara, you were right. Fake children did make those gingerbread houses that weren't actually made by children. As so frequently, they have child's drawings that literally look nothing like what a child would draw in movies as well. Annie is giving a gift to the little girl that the couple adopted in the beginning of the movie. Michael and Lyle are sampling the waffles at a nearby table, and Michael is very impressed. Papa Holt is showing Annie's parents the development plans. Okay, can we take a moment here? We just, like, need to breathe through this moment because, I mean, it features the original buildings and then just plopped on top of it is a glass skyrise building. And I have feelings, and the feelings are, what the fucking holy hell are you doing? That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to put buildings on top of other buildings and, like, have them look like complimentary additions. This is not complimentary addition. What were your feelings, Tam?
I believe I wrote, which feature a high-rise building jutting from the facade of a few brick storefronts, including their cafe. Annie's parents love it. Tamara thinks it looks atrocious.
Corinne 100% agrees with Tamara.
Yes, because it looks like two separate buildings that were just squished together.
Yeah. And the skyrise building has absolutely no personality to it whatsoever. It's just this, like, glass lump on top of it. Yeah.
If you go, like, by what, Red Sox Stadium, like, they have pretty tall brick buildings with storefronts. And, like, why didn't you go that route? Like, why didn't you try to match the facade or maybe even tweak it a little bit? You could have made it more modern, but, like, bring some of the elements of the bottom up. Not just be like, the bottom's brick, the top's going to be steel and windows. Ta-da!
I know. It was bad. Steel and windows. Okay, you look at the Chrysler building in New York. It's gorgeous. It's like Art Deco style, whatever. It's a different vintage than the buildings that are there. But, like, that would blend better. Like, some kind of version of that would blend better with the buildings that were already there. But yes, no. Problems? We got problems with this design. 2 out of 2 ODK hosts agree. No. Just no. But Papa Holt assures them that there will be many more projects like this, and ODK hopes not, once William takes the helm of the business next year. Not combining, like, old spaces with new spaces, but combining them that way because it's bad. William is nearby with Annie, and his ears perk up at this comment. Papa Holt adds, "If you want it, that is." William does indeed, but he knows he can't do it alone. Damn Skippy, he can't do it alone. He calls Lyle over and asks him, "What's your official title?" Lyle reminds him that he doesn't have one, just like Annie didn't get a paycheck for all that work she did. So William asks, "How does Chief Operating Officer sounds?" COO, bitches. Yes. Lyle smiles. He's finally getting the recognition he so rightfully deserves. William and his father hug. They are finally on the same page. But the happily ever afters aren't done. William fishes a box from behind the counter and presents it to Annie. He says, "It's your turn now." She opens it, and when she does, she's surprised to see her ballerina snow globe. Regifting much? 'Cause nothing says present that you'll love like an item that you already have being re-given to you that you love. Surefire win. She's confused until Will pulls a key on a gold chain from his pocket. Annie is elated. "Is that my missing one?" she asks. He shakes his head. "No, I'm not that good, but it fits." She takes the key from him and inserts it into the back of the snow globe and winds it, and the ballerina starts twirling in circles around the base. He says, with love in his voice, "The ballerina's dancing again." And Annie says, "Yeah, she is." She swoops him into her arms. They sway back and forth for a moment, wish each other a Merry Christmas, and they kiss again. And Corinne just tears up just a little bit at that moment because it was really, really sweet.
Of course. Of course she does. Oh, my goodness.
And then Corinne asks Tamara, "Hey, Tam, what'd you think of this movie?"
Now, although this is a stellar Hallmark Christmas movie, top notch, I'm going to knock it down a wee bit because it is such a glaring reproduction with the Hallmark flair of 2 weeks' notice. Like, there were some scenes that I was like, okay, I see you, Paul and Kimberly. It was almost so, and maybe it's because I've seen 2 weeks' notice so many times that the similarities were just so blatant that It kind of took me out of the movie. Because I was like, oh, in the courtyard. Oh, and saving the building. Oh, and then they're at the high. Oh, and then this and that. Like, it started deviating towards the end, but the beginning, like, really set the tone for me. Yeah. So then I was, like, spending the majority of the movie picking apart all of the similarities and differences instead of just watching the gosh darn movie. But I do love Kimberly Sustat. I do love Paul Campbell. I do love when they work together. I love when they write together. They do a really good job, and they have wonderful chemistry on screen. Since it's a better than average Hallmark movie, I'm going to give it 3.5 dry kisses. Corinne, how much are you going to give it?
I am going to give this 4 dry kisses. For me, I think a lot of movies all have frequently a similar plot line. And I will say Save the Building is
blatant.
No. I agree, which is why I called it 2 weeks' notice Christmas style. But Save the Building is such a trope for Hallmark movies. There's so many Save the Building movies for Hallmark. The Save the Building is one of my least favorite tropes, but I really liked this Save the Building trope. I thought they did a great job. It had so many nice, funny touches in it. It does not get a higher than 4 dry kiss rating because it has a real lack of diversity in it. It does have a nice openly gay couple in it, though, so good on that. Liked that. I thought that Paul and Kimberly did a great job watching 2 weeks' notice and then zhuzhing it up into Christmas by Starlight. Yeah, so 4 dry kisses for me, 3.5 for you. And I just have to ask you, what movie do we have coming up next week?
We are doing All I Didn't Want for Christmas. It is a VH1 movie starring Gabourey Sidibe.
Ah, I love her. She is so fantastic. Her comedic chops are on point. And she also was the star of Precious, where there was not much comedic chops going on in that. But
I will never, ever watch that movie ever again. That was so disturbing. Oh, my God. Twitch, 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 twitch.
But, like, really good, right?
Sure. It was powerful.
Powerful.
And it was moving. Yes. But it was a movie I will only watch once.
Yes. I definitely have those. Or sometimes two times because of the podcast made me watch it. But yes. And Gabourey Sidibe, it was her introduction to the movie world. And we thank the movie for that. If you have anything that you would like to say about Christmas at the Starlight, Christmas by Starlight, 2 weeks notice, All I Didn't Want for Christmas, which hopefully will show during the Christmas season on VH1. I don't know. But you can get it through Amazon if you want. You can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
Is it even Twitter anymore?
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't call it that. I refuse to call it that. It's Twitter.
Okay.
You can call always, it that if you want. You can correct me each time.
I don't give a fuck. I am barely on it. I do not care. And that is one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time.
My mom's favorite candy was Jordan almonds.
No.
I think I've said that before in a previous episode because I recognize that face that you made when I just told you.
That's not right. That's just not right.
Yeah.
Although somebody's got to enjoy that wedding snack.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're probably really, really happy when you leave a wedding reception and you got like a whole slew of bags of these because nobody else wants them.
Oh my gosh, I bet your mom, like, she would probably crash weddings just so that she could just, like, yeah. Snake up the Jordan almonds. You're, like, going over.
Do you want this favor? You want that favor? Do you want that favor? No, you could eat that?
Yes.
No? Okay, great.
Yeah, I can just imagine you going over to her place and you're like, who's Juanita and Vern? I don't know any of these people. She's like, just a little wedding I stopped by because I thought they might have a little Jordan almonds, you know? Keep my eye out on things.
I recall the first time I went to the movies with her and we got to the concession line and got popcorn and sodas and, can I get a box of Jordan almonds? And I'm like, you said what? You went what? Who's Jordan and why are you eating her almonds?
I bet they like dusted them off.
It must have been a while ago because I haven't seen a Jordan almond in a movie theater in about a decade.
Oh, there's a reason for that.
Oh, I know there is. They wised up. They're like, these aren't moving. They're actually fused to the counter now. I guess maybe we should stop selling them.